Reading from Second Canto, Chapter 9. And we'll be discussing texts this morning, texts 44 and 45. We'll start with a little background. Chapter 9 is entitled Answers by Citing the Lord's Version. In chapter 9, the Chaturshloki verses are found. You know what the Chaturshloki verses are in Bhagavad Gita. 10, 8, 9, 10, and 11. And those four essential verses include the message of the entire Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, there's Chaturshloki verses for the Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, texts 33, 34, 35, 36. The Chaturshloki verses are spoken directly by the Personality of Godhead to Lord Brahma after Brahma achieved spiritual perfection through his tapa. At the extended period of time that he was doing his tapa, at the end of that period of time, the Supreme Lord manifested the entire spiritual world like suddenly, right before him. Whereas before there was nothing but darkness in all directions. And all of a sudden, the whole spiritual sky manifested. He came before the Lord. They had some exchange. He posed four questions. The Lord gave four answers. And what just happened before these verses is the assignment was then given to Lord Brahma to recreate. This means that this at the beginning of one of the days of Brahma, there's a partial devastation after the daytime or during each night of Brahma, and a total annihilation at the end of the life of Brahma. So during Brahma's night, there's a partial devastation. In the morning, he gets up and does his sadhana, and then goes to the office. He recreates the universe. That's what he does when he goes to the office. He does his prescribed duty. And the Lord gave that assignment. And then Lord Brahma witnessed the immediate disappearance of the Lord. Just as he had appeared, he suddenly, poof, was gone. And then Brahma, setting an example for those who he would have to serve after creating them, he fixed himself in proper conduct. And then suddenly the narration goes to the sons of Brahma, because that's part of the unfolding of creation as he generates sons, and superlative amongst them was Narada Muni. Narada Muni was superlative because of his qualities. He had pleased his father by his qualities. His qualities of behavior, ideal behavior, mannerly behavior, meekness and obedience to his father, and sense control. Having pleased his father, who knew all about everything that there is to know, because he had received all of the Vedas, he began inquiring about specifically what's mentioned, as he inquired about the energies of the Lord. And certainly Brahma is knowledgeable about that. He's the chief engineer. Not only, you know, one kind of engineering, he's the professor of all engineerings. He's the dean of electrical engineering and chemical engineering and mechanical engineering and civil engineering and engineering. He has to know everything because he has to put the whole thing together. So Narada started inquiring. Not that Narada wanted to do the same thing, make another universe. But it's part of Vedic wisdom to understand the energies of God. And so Brahma is perfectly suited to explain that, and he inquired. The last verse that I covered, previous verse, the great sage Narada also inquired in detail from his father Brahmaji, the great grandfather of all the universe, after seeing him well satisfied. So the emphasis in the purport is going to the necessity of satisfying the spiritual master in order to qualify oneself to receive transcendental knowledge. Prabhupada says it in many different ways, but one in the purport, one of the ways he says it is the spiritual master's satisfaction is the means of assimilating transcendental knowledge. One receives knowledge by service, not by payment. The university requires you to give some money, otherwise, see you later. So that's the exchange. You give some money, they give some knowledge. And the Vedic system is one's heart becomes open through the medium of service and submission and good manners and sense control, and then one receives transcendental knowledge. That's the Vedic system. So Prabhupada explains that one cannot be a qualified student without sense control. And one can't be a qualified teacher without having previously been a qualified student. So not only the teachers must have sense control, but the students must have sense control. And mannerly behavior. Shilena, good behavior, appropriate behavior for circumstances. And prashrayena, meekness. When some indication is given, one is obedient. Point that is being made is that qualifies one to assimilate, not only to hear it, but to assimilate transcendental knowledge. That's the background. Now the two verses we'll discuss this morning, Narada, references made to the Chaturshloki verses. Narada hears from his father the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, because first it's speaking about Vedic knowledge, now it's speaking specifically about Tasma Idam Bhagavatam. He hears the Bhagavatam, and he hears the Bhagavatam in its essence, which is four verses. Those four verses that the Lord spoke to Brahma, Narada hears from Brahma. And those four verses heard from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Brahma then become expanded. Well, I'll read what Prabhupada says. They become expanded to clarify. Because in the beginning of the next chapter, this is chapter 9, the beginning of chapter 10, the very first verse of chapter 10 identifies the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So with all these numbers to keep track of, there's four essential verses and there's 10 topics within the four verses, and within the 18,000 verses there's 10 topics. So if they're in the four verses in a very compressed, tight, packed up manner, the other 17,996 verses, they're expansions of those 10 topics in different manner and fashion. They're not superfluous. That's the point that Prabhupada is making in the purport. Really, all you need is these four and forget the other ones. No, you need the other ones because they're expanding. They're nothing but extensions of those. They're as valuable as the four verses, the four Chaturshloki verses, because they're helping to elucidate, helping to make it very clear. Just like, you know, with your academic work, you may make some bullet points. But if you just make your bullet points, is it going to be clear to everybody what those bullet points are? You need elaboration, examples, some statistics, and then that helps make the bullet point clear. It's not superfluous. Now, the bullet points is just a summary. Points. We're going to touch on this point, this point, this point. So, text 44 reads, thereupon, the supplementary Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, which was described by the Personality of Godhead to Brahma, and which contains 10 characteristics, was told with satisfaction by the father, Brahma, to his son, Narada. Brahma was satisfied to explain this to his son because he was satisfied by his qualities. So, satisfied to his qualities, it was just another further exchange with that same person whom he was satisfied with to give him that particular information. Brahmaji had also purport. Brahmaji had also advised Narada previously that he should expand the idea as he had heard from Brahmaji. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed this to Srila Rupa Goswami in a nutshell. But the disciple Rupa Goswami expanded this very elaborately. And the same subject was further expanded by Jiva Goswami and even further by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. We are trying to follow in the footsteps of all these authorities. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not like ordinary fiction or mundane literature. It is unlimited in strength. And however one may expand it according to one's ability, Bhagavatam still cannot be finished by such expansion. The indication is in the next sentence that and the earthly, so there's the four essential verses, there's 18,000 verses, and in the heavenly planets, you know how big the Bhagavatam is? 4 billion verses. Because there are many places where, for example, Maharaj Parikshit says, wait, can you explain this point? Elaborate further? And sometimes that ends up being several chapters. And then, like the sixth canto is laid out like that. He's going on explaining something. Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit puts on the brakes and says, wait, you said this and then you said that, can you... Then explains this and that. Then, wait a minute. Over here there was some... Can you explain that part more? It's just questions and answers. And so, in the heavenly planets, there's more questions. And so it probes the detail further, or a particular subject more, or a particular history of an individual, or something. Just like in your academic work, you may be presenting a paper, and after presenting the paper, somebody asks some question, and then you expand that subject. And that question may lead to another question, may lead to another question. You go back to the paper, and then somebody asks another question about something else, like that. The Bhagavatam is 4 billion verses in the heavenly planets. Put that on your bookshelf with Bhaktivedanta purports. It'll take up a lot of gigabytes. So Narada's inquiring, Brahmaji's explaining. First it's the Vedas in general, specifically about the energies of the Lord. That's the topic of this canto, by the way. And then specifically about the Bhagavatam. Text 45. In succession, O King, this is Shukadeva addressing Parikshit Maharaj. In succession, O King, the great sage Narada instructed Srimad Bhagavatam unto the unlimitedly powerful Vyasadeva, who meditated in devotional service upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, on the bank of the river Saraswati. So this is, now you're in more familiar territory. This is first canto stuff. In the fifth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada instructed the great sage Vyasadeva as follows. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadrik Sushi Shravan Satyurato Drita Vrataha Urukramas Yakila Bhanda Muktaye Samadhina Nuspara Tadvacheshtitam. O greatly fortunate, pious philosopher, your name and fame are universal, and you are fixed in the Absolute Truth with spotless character and infallible vision. I ask you to meditate upon the activities of the Personality of Godhead, whose activities are unparalleled. Prabhupada explains the next paragraph that Brahma meditated. He instructed Narada, you meditate. So sometimes people ask, in your process of Krishna consciousness, is there meditation? It's like, you know, do you breathe in your practice? Because what is meditation? It's fixing the mind on something in a systematic way. In your academic work, is there meditation? You fix your mind in a systematic way and your subject matter. You consider from different angles the subject matter. Better. So this is a discipline of meditation. Upon what does one meditate? meditation, impersonal meditation is meditation on Brahman, meditation for a devotee, just like Manmana. Fix your mind upon me. So this is Prabhupada's point. Devotee isn't interested in this impersonal meditation thing or the material problem-solving meditation thing. The devotee is interested in meditation upon Krishna. And specifically mentioned Arukramasyaki Labhanda Muktaye Samadina Nusmana Tadvicheshtam. You're to meditate upon the activities of the personality of Godhead. Narada advised meditation upon the transcendental activities of the Lord. Impersonal Brahman has no activities. But the personality of Godhead has many activities. And all such activities are transcendental without any tinge of material quality. Then he goes reverse by logic. If the activities of the Supreme Brahman were material activities, then Narada would not have advised Vyas to meditate upon them. He's like a lawyer. He's arguing this thing, then he argues this way. This is what he's saying. He's not saying, don't do this. And why would he do this if it's material? Because Narada's not on the material platform, and Vyasa's not on the material platform. Meditate on the Lord's activities means they're spiritual. And the Parabrahman is Lord Sri Krishna. Brahman, then Parabrahman. Meditate on Parabrahman, the activities of Parabrahman. And who is Parabrahman? Krishna. What's the verse from Bhagavad Gita? 10th chapter. A little louder. Ajam Vibhum. Yeah. Prabhupada gives the next verse also. Ahus Tvam Rishaya Sarve Devarshir Naradas Tata Asito Devalo Vyasa Svayam Chaiva Ravishime. So Krishna is, according to Arjuna, Krishna is Parabrahman. So I describe the activities of Parabrahman. Now back to the first canto. When Vyas fixed his mind in meditation, he did it in bhakti yoga trance and actually saw the Supreme Person. What's the verse? These are the verses from Canto 1, Chapter 7, starting with text number 4, are starting with text number 6, are very important verses. They appear in the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami 4 times, starting right in the first, the Tattva Sandarbha. The reason he holds them to be so important is what Vyas realized is the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. His instruction was, sit in meditation, what it is that you realize, then write one literature just on that. So he was to realize the personality of Godhead in his fullness, Purusham Purnam Mayam Chat Tat Apashrayam. So that was the subject matter. So Jiva Goswami argues very persuasively, we need to understand what Vyas realized, because that's the essence of what the Bhagavatam is. Just like the Chaturshloki verses is the essence of the Bhagavatam. So here in the second canto, they just presented the Chaturshloki verses. Now he's taking us where Brahma is explaining it to Narada, Narada is explaining it to Vyas. He's taking us to that realization of Vyas. So how did he go about realizing it? By absorption in Bhakti Yoga. Anarto Pashyamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madhoksa Jay. You know the, anyone know the verse? You know the verse? What assignment for this evening? Learn this verse. 176. Anarto Pashyamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madhoksa Jay. Bhakti Yogam Adhoksa Jay. Unto the, not adhoksaja, but adhoksaja, unto adhoksaja, devotional service, unto adhoksaja. So a devotional service means, we know this from the sixth chapter, last verse of in Bhagavad Gita, sixth chapter, last verse is the verse where Krishna is saying the topmost of all forms of yoga is Bhakti Yoga. What's that verse? A little louder so they can hear it back there. Yogi nam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmanam shadavan bhajate yomam Same yukta tamo mataha. Bhajate yomam. Bhajate. Bhajate. Prabhupada explains in the purport this word. Bhaj is the root word of bhakti, and the implication is practical activity of the senses. Right? That's what it says. Practical activity of the senses. It's not some dreamland, you know, emotion somewhere. It's practical activity with the senses in the service of the master of the senses. What's another definition for bhakti given by Narada and Narada Pancharatra? Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. The Rishikesha is served by your senses. Bhakti Ruchate. Devotional service is practical activity. Using the senses unto Adhoksaja. What does Adhoksaja mean? Beyond what your senses can perceive. Let's do that again. We're supposed to engage our senses in practical activity unto one who's beyond the senses to perceive. And by that method of submission and devotion, one can perceive he who is beyond the senses to perceive. Because you don't perceive with your blunt material senses. You can perceive with spiritualized senses. And otherwise, you can't perceive. He remains adhoksaja. But through the linking process of bhakti, he can be perceived. He can be glorified and he can be served through medium as bhakti. It's a mystery. And that word mystery is used in the ninth chapter something like 50 times. Because it's a prelude to the Chaturshloki verses, it's a mystery. That is, devotees can understand the mystery and those that aren't devotees can't understand the mystery. So that the key that unlocks the mystery is bhakti. How to connect with transcendence is through the medium of devotion. And devotion is expressed through practical activity. Not just some softness of the mind off in a dark corner somewhere. Some emotion, some sentiment. There's sentiment, but it's not, it's connected with practical activity. It's service, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Bhajate Yomam. Or Anarto Pashamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madhoksajay. That's what he did. And then Lokasya Janatat. Oh, excuse me. Lokasya Janato Vidvang Shakri Satvata Sahita. He then compiled Srimad Bhagavatam for the people in general who are unfortunate because they're bound by the illusory energy. The verses do go back to text 4. Bhakti yoga, bhakti yogena manasi, samyak pranigite male. You know that verse? Bhakti yogena manasi, samyak pranigite male. 4, 5, 6. Those verses especially are verses that Jiva Goswami refers to repeatedly. So the process. Bhakti yogena, that's being paraphrased here. When Vyas fixed his mind in meditation, he did it in bhakti yoga trance. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate amale trance. That was the instruction, that's what he did. And then, what was his experience? He saw the personality of Godhead. Apashyat purusham purnam. Purusham purnam. That's packed. Jiva Goswami says, purusham purnam means it's not only means the Supreme Person, but the Supreme Person is with the entire spiritual abode. The Supreme Lord is not alone. He's with all of his associates and he's in his spiritual dham. He experienced the whole spiritual dham sitting there on his little lotus flower or big lotus flower. He saw the whole spiritual world and all of the Lord's energies. Specifically mentioned one was the mayam chatad apashrayam. His illusory energy under his control. Literally, it's translated behind him, but under his control. The Lord's maya, his energy, is under his control. And it works one way upon the devotee and an opposite way upon the non-devotee, but it's the same energy. Here's how Prabhupada writes. He saw the Supreme Person with Maya, the illusory energy, in contraposition. In contraposition means behind him. As we have discussed before, the Lord's Maya, or illusion, is also a representation. Because, so a representation means it indicates Krishna. The energy of Krishna indicates Krishna. The energy indicates the energetic. The wives of the Kaliya serpent and offering prayers to the personality of Godhead indicate specifically this. It's in the scientific community called intelligent design. You know that, the intelligent design argument. So you see order within something. So you understand, it infers, and they specifically use the word, it infers that you exist. There's an intelligent person behind the design. So Maya is also a representation of Krishna. It infers the presence of Krishna in I think it's St. Thomas Aquinas, a Christian theologian, gave this as their certain proofs of the existence of God. It's not a proof. It's inferred. It's likely, most likely explanation. Behind order, behind structure and systems of things, there's an intelligence behind it. It's a classic argument. It's an old, long-standing one. It's not new in modern science. Intelligent design is not a new argument. The wives of the Kaliya serpent knew it. It's not a new argument. They just have it, you know, with a little more sophistication of examples that they give. That's a classic argument. And the objection is a classic objection. This is not scientific. This is spiritual. This is religious emotionality. What evidence is there? Where is God? Show me God. Where is this intelligent being behind the thing that you say is designed? Where? This is sentiment creeping into science. It's not scientific. And the wives of the Kaliya serpent say, for your devotee, you are very clearly present by this inference, but for the non-devotee, you remain silent, being self-satisfied. Because Krishna doesn't need to prove himself to anybody. Then he makes this, Prabhupada makes this very standard logical argument that darkness is not independent of light. Here's how the argument goes. Without light, no one can experience the contraposition of darkness. There's this contraposition of it again term. What do we know about darkness if we don't know what is light? Of course, one could make the argument, just turn out the light, you know what darkness is. So what was Brahma experiencing before there was light? He was experiencing darkness. But darkness means the absence of light. It's a philosophical argument. That says, when you're facing light, you don't see darkness. You turn your back the light and you see darkness. Darkness means the absence of light. However, Maya or illusion cannot overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but stands apart from Him. Apashrayam. And that's in the verse. Apashat purusham purnam mayam cha tad hyphen apashrayam, tad apashrayam, standing apart from Him, separated energy, under His control, standing behind Him, standing apart from Him, but under His control, maya dyakshena prakriti, under His control. final sentence, final paragraph. Therefore, so here's what we're supposed to understand from all of this. Perfection of meditation is realization of the personality of Godhead along with his transcendental activities. Meditation on impersonal Brahman is troublesome business for the meditator, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10.5. What's the verse? Sanskrit. Meditation upon my impersonal form is always trouble for those who are embodied. Klesha is how it starts. Okay. We'll just get the first part. Klesha dikritarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam. Fixing the cheta on the avyakta is klesha. Klesha dikritarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam. Asakti. Those who are attached to the avyakta. Advancement on that path is very troublesome. Klesha. The suffering. So there is bhakti yogena manasi, there is fixing of the mind in our devotional practice. Do we have a process of meditation in bhakti? You bet. Brahma did it, Narada did it, Vyas did it. We do it. Our principal meditation in this age of Kali is mantra meditation. We try to absorb our mind in the holy name of the Lord through sound vibration. And we try to absorb our mind in the message of Srimad Bhagavatam through meditation and devotion. That's the medium is spiritual sound vibrations. And the activity is meditation. And again, specifically, Vyas is being advised by Narada to meditate upon the activities of the personality of Godhead. And activities implies a lot of things. It implies person, but it also implies energies, which is the first subject matter that Narada inquired about from Brahma. And so it's important for us to understand about the Lord's energies, his material as well as his spiritual energies, for good reason. We're in the ocean of material energy. Just previously in Hyderabad mentioning, someone was asking, could you help us understand why it's important to become familiar with and have some understanding about the Lord's energies? One practical consideration is like a riddle. What is it that's in front of you and behind you and to the left of you and to the right of you and above you and below you in all directions? Material energy. We're in the ocean of material energy. We're little spirit souls in this ocean of material energy. And guess what? It's got a tight grip. And we are strongly identifying with this material ocean of material energy. Although we're not material energy. But we're deluded by that material energy. So understanding properly what that material energy is in relation to the Lord will help us get free from the illusion that we're this material energy, and it'll help us identify the Lord. It will help us in our meditation upon the spiritual energies of the Lord. Conversely, if you don't have the proper understanding, then we're going to be still under the whammy of, even we're thinking of, trying to think of the Lord and his spiritual energies. We'll be under this conception of the material energies, because that's our present position. Like the first of the chatur sloki verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matma pajante ma buddha bhava samanita. If we can understand, when we do understand that everything, matter and spirit, have come from the Supreme Lord, that he is the source of everything, it naturally flows that we engage in his devotional service. Not just in a regulative, but in a... That's what you do when you're in that position. You understand the personality of Godhead is the source of everything. You serve him. What else is there? Is there a second thing to do? If you could not understand it, then there's lots of things to do. But you have that understanding, and service to the Lord follows. So it's very important to understand the relationship of God's energies with him as the source. And for that same reason, the Vedanta Sutra begins with inquiring, who is the source? What is the source of everything? When understanding the source, sambandha gyan, following that is abhideya gyan. You act in relation to that source. Engage in devotional service. And then the culmination, or the fruit of acting in that relationship with the Supreme, is realization of the Supreme. Loving devotional service. Prayojan again. Okay, any discussion? Yes. Material energy is also energy of the Lord.
So, is it because it's in relation to the conditioned living entity, that's why it is called material energy, or because it conditions us?
Why is it called material energy is what you want to know. It's called material energy because it's invested with the potency to delude marginal energy. There's a deluding potency in this material energy. Looks pretty innocent. Look, it's just a wall and table and floor and, you know, not hurting anybody. It's just sitting there. Material energy. Another reason that it's given the term material energy is that it's not conscious, chaitana, as opposed to the marginal energy and the superior energy. They're conscious. So there's distinction. I was just listening to a lecture where Prabhupada was saying material and spiritual, but actually they're both spiritual. In this sense, they're both from the Supreme Lord. It's not literally separate from the Supreme Lord. It doesn't exist separate from the Supreme Lord. And that's one of the chatur sloki. It's the second of the chatur sloki verses of the Bhagavatam, which says, to see something as existing with value separate from its source of emanation, to see that way, know that to be my illusory energy. So that's the deluding potency. seeing matter as separate from Krishna. So we can say spiritual is to see in relation to Krishna, so then it's spiritual. The spiritualizing effect of the material energy is made possible through the medium of devotional service, connecting that energy again with the Supreme Lord. It acts to spiritualize our consciousness. That's another sense of material, seeing as separate from the Lord. There is such a tendency in that material energy to see it as separate, so that the potency, the potential for that is within the material energy, and the potential is within the living entity to look upon material energy as separate from the Lord. And Krishna describes it in that way, vina prakriti rashtada. Therefore, material. So more technically, it's aprakriti. And we say material energy. Okay. Something else? Do it again. Partial and full, that part I got, and then something about years and 100 years, and your voice.
So the partial comes after the end of the day.
Ah, a partial and complete annihilation. Okay. Partial is not the entire creation is destroyed, but the end of the day of Brahma, he goes to sleep. His resting period, he's entitled. And during that resting period, the lower planetary systems and Bhuvar and Svarga local planetary systems are annihilated. Above them, they're not annihilated. Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. They're not annihilated. This is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It gets really hot. It gets so hot in Maharloka, they get on their vimanas and go upwards to the Janaloka planet. So the partial annihilation is, it's a long period of drought and then a little fire and everything burns, and then a flood, then it dissolves. That which is now ashes just dissolves, like a little tablet dissolves in water. Very practical arrangement. Very practical. You want to design something that would be a very practical way. And so that's what happens. And at the end of his night, when the next morning he's got to go to the office and fix the problem, he has to recreate and repopulate the demigods on down. The places and the living entities. Yeah, every day. Every day was life. No vacation. Every day. And the total annihilation, everything is finished. And then those subtle ingredients are withdrawn back into the body of Mahavishnu. the whole show is over. And a resting period of equal duration as the life of Brahma, which is the life of the universe. The life of the universe has its counterparts. Vedic time is cyclical and very well balanced. For the time of manifestation of the universe is equal to the time of its being not manifest. That the exhalation of the Lord and the inhalation of the Lord are of equal duration. And then again, exhalation. Very symmetrical, very nice design, very, very subtle. Anything else? When a devotee does what? When a devotee offers prasadam. If somebody else takes prasadam, he doesn't know it's prasadam. Does it act spiritually? Well, you know the answer. It's prasad. It's mercy. That's how it works. The devotee knows. And the non-devotee doesn't know. Just like chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. They don't know. We know. Does it act? Of course. Prasad, it's factually, it's not the imagination of the devotee or the entitlement of the devotee only. Because you know, then you get spiritual benefit. When there's openness, when there's respecting of prasad, then we receive more the fullness of the holy name, of the scripture, the message of the scripture, the whole everything, the objects of devotion. But they all act absolutely. Whether we understand or don't understand, because they're absolute. Just you doing like what Prabhupada did in the purport, use the reverse logic and say, it's not absolute. It depends upon whether you understand it or not. Then it acts. Then it's not absolute. It's absolute. Krishna Prasad is absolute. The remnants, after everything is left, and the insects that eat the spoiled, the fish thrown into the water. Spiritual benefit. They've got a long way to go, but spiritual benefit. Motherhood requires so much patience. Anything else? Yes?
Emotional activity is practical activity of the senses.
Yeah.
Because I have preference for other practical activities, I have preference for other practical activities. How can I be enthusiastic in all kinds of?
Recognize what devotional service is and adjust accordingly. Liking, not liking, is a function of the mind. According to the conception that we have in our minds, we like something, we don't like something. Two people looking at the same thing, one likes, one doesn't like. So, if we have part of the benefit of transcendental knowledge is to provide us with spiritual conceptions of things, or to see things as Krishna sees things. Shastra Chakshusha, Jnana Chakshusha, means to see things as Krishna sees things. And that's wow, what a privilege, to see things as Krishna sees things. And so, what is bhakti? Whether our mind likes or doesn't like, just like, you know, the jaundiced person may experience rock candy as bitter, but it's sweet. So I may like, not like. We don't, you know, if we're covered in a diseased condition, we're not likely to understand what a thing really is. Therefore, we need the assistance of one who does. So it's just practical. Just take it as medicine, if you like. Devotional service is practical activity. With the practical activity, there is some disposition of the mind. But it's not the point that Prabhupada makes in that purport. It's as some people criticize. It's not just some sentiment. Bhakti is just some sentiment. No, it's practical activity. With practical activity, some feelings will be there. But it's practical activity. Not just some sentimental people that can't do anything practical. They go off and do bhakti because they can't cope with reality. They go off and do something, you know, entertain themselves within their sentimentality kind of thing. Not so. By definition, it means practical activity. There's practical activity of the mind. Practical activity of the working senses, knowledge acquiring senses. In a mood of priti purvakam, the mood of love and affection. One of the standard criterion for becoming an eligible candidate for receiving special mercy from Krishna is the willingness to take up the mood and the position both of humble menial service. Our scriptures are filled with examples. Humble menial service. And when Krishna sees, or a great devotee sees, or Radharani sees, or some elevated soul sees this mood of humble service, it inspires them, it invokes from within them the wish, let me give to this person. Classic example that you're familiar with is Narada serving the Bhaktivedantas, but there's so many. Because of his mood, just wanting to serve them. Little boy. But he wasn't, you know, frivolous and talkative and all things that little boys often are. He was very happy just to do some service for them, bring their meals, wash their clothing, clean, get this, get that. Very happy just being with them, serving them. And they were very pleased by that mood. And so they gave him mercy more than otherwise. because it's just a natural reciprocation. So taking up humble service, practical activity, is a very important part of qualifying ourselves, now going back to the language of the purport, to assimilate transcendental knowledge. It cleanses senses through that practical activity, which otherwise doesn't get cleansed without practical activity. The mind doesn't get sufficiently cleansed without practical activity of the mind. So we can absorb our mind in our present condition through the medium of practical activity. Something that you really like to do. Your mind is absorbed in that something. And Krishna, if Krishna is the object of that something you really like to do, then your mind becomes absorbed in Krishna. That thus purified, mind and senses become purified, then contemplation upon Krishna in fixed meditation becomes possible because of purity. We have to qualify ourselves for that stage through the medium of practical activity. Purify the mind and senses. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.